And welcome to the first 7-Inch Club, episode 18. We skipped a week, so I'm sure you've missed us, but if this is your first time listening, this is the podcast where we dig deep into those old, ancient, dusty dollar bins and find a bunch of records by bands that didn't make it too far. They got a 7-inch or two out, and they peaced out, and time has forgot them. The internet has forgot them, and as we've said in past episodes, we are here. We are the internet, and we are here to remember them and bring them back to the internet. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Mike, how hard are you slamming to the new Knocked Loose this week?
it's a mixed bag, because I listen, like, it starts out and you listen to it, I'm like, this is a little twisted. Like, I don't really have a problem with twisted music, but it's pretty undeniable that it's twisted.
Yeah, it comes with a twisted cartoon.
Yeah. I think both of us discovered, I mean, not discovered, but I think both of us listened to Knocked Loose because they were on Axe to Grind many years ago, like a year or two ago. And the kid or whoever was on it came off really endearing. They're from some, you know, bumfuck area of the country.
Yeah.
And it was like a very like, aw shucks, you know, we only got so like, we had to appreciate every single band that came through and blah, blah, blah. And that's why we sound so weird, because we're influenced by all this weird stuff. And, you know, that's really endearing to me, because that type of ethic is gone, I think. Like, you don't really have that with the internet anymore. So it's like, let me check these guys out. They're really heavy. I liked them a lot. And now they're twisted enough where I don't think they could do that aw shucks anything. Like, that's definitely very calculated. But at the end of the day, I don't think you could deny those slams on that record, because there are some pretty heavy, tasty slams on there. So I will grit my teeth through the twistedness, and I think it's pretty good. Just the slam parts are definitely very, very good on that record.
I love that there's no concessions to good vibes on that record at all. There's no singing parts. There's no like light. There's no peace or joy. I have one little problem, and this is pretty nitpicky, but I want to get it out there. There's a cartoon that comes with it. That's a little weird, but it's a concept record. I don't know if you caught that. It's like the lyrics are a concept about like crashing your car and killing your wife by accident.
Okay.
And I can't tell if it's a metaphor or like if it's a literal supernatural story that he tries to bring her back from the dead. That's what it seems to be. But he never lets up. Like there should be a part in the middle where he's like bummed and drinking and like depressed and like, you know, thinking about things. That never happens. The whole record is like, your ghost is here, and I'm digging up your ghost with my face, and I'm pulling bones out. He never stops fucking with blood and bones and ghosts. It's not part of the story where he like lets up to get you to the supernatural ending. It's just nonstop supernatural endings through the entire EP. But slam, so many slams. They busted out such a bucket of slams. Question two, where are you going to be when Dune launches?
Is it? It's one of those ones that's going to be at home, right? I don't have high hopes. Yeah. I saw the trailer, and I don't really have high hopes. So I think I like Dune for a lot different, more different reasons than other people like Dune. And I'm not one of those book reading types. And
yeah, fuck books. So
I don't think I'm going to have the same opinion on Dune as anybody else anyway. So
yeah,
I don't think I need to rush out to see. I hope it's as trippy as the original Dune, but I don't think it's going to be. So like the reason I like the original Dune is because you look at the sets and they're insane. There's no movie that has sets like that, like practical sets, not fucking CGI, like real ass sets that people built, and they're ridiculous. But in the core of the movie is just talking, like it's just talking about space mumbo jumbo, and it's so odd. And I just don't think that's a thing that could be captured in a movie in 2021.
I was a child when that came out. And the action figure for the Sardaukar Warriors had like a green lens. I was like, oh, shit, I got to see this movie. Those things have a green eye. That's that's what I wanted to see. And then Sting is in it. He's in his underwear. That's cool. But like I do read the books. And I really hope, speaking of just talking, I hope they get to I can't remember if it's the second or third book, because it's been a long time. But one of them is literally just boardroom meetings. Yeah. The whole book is just boardroom intrigue and like people like thinking about things and thinking about different stuff. If they get to that movie, that's going to be a killer. That's going to be like The Conversation, but with aliens.
Do you think this movie is going to spark another resurgence of bands and songs named after Dune within the hardcore scene? Because that was a big thing in the 90s.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what influences a child anymore. Like, I don't, because there's like everything is so big and so well put together now. Even bad stuff is like really, you know, like a Netflix TV show is the best thing that's ever been made visually right now. So I can't tell what's the kids really took the Avengers way harder than I like those movies, but they're like influenced by it and they know the music. You could play any of the music from the Avengers to me. I wouldn't know what you, it just sounds like tooting horns. I don't know any of the melodies, and those kids have like internalized all that stuff. So I'm off in space. I'm an old man. I don't take new data in anymore. It'll be good though. I'll be at a show if this show was all like Fremen and Shai Haluds and Harkonnens.
And still all that suit.
Still suit.
You're probably right. Probably more Squid Game influenced bands than Doom.
Oh yeah, for sure. Bands. Number one Halloween costume of the year, Squid Game. People can't buy enough triangles for their faces to keep so Halloween easy. Alive this year.
Yeah. Such an easy costume. I had a little old school, early original OG Border Boss content.
Oh yeah.
Today I went to Taco Bell. I didn't even know they had a new thing. They have a new thing called the Cantina Crispy Melt Taco.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Does this have ads and stuff? Because I didn't see anything about it.
I haven't seen an ad, but they let you know in the app that you could be one of the first humans on Earth to stick your tongue into a Cantina Melt Taco or whatever.
So have you had it yet or no?
I've had two of them already.
Okay, so then we could compare and contrast then. Yeah. So if you guys were in the dark like me up until about 6 hours ago, the Cantina Crispy Melt Taco, the whole deal with it is that it has a white corn shell that's freshly fried daily, and it has a melted layer of three cheese blend and nacho cheese sauce, and then the rest is just a taco supreme. So I don't know if they're really freshly fried daily, but the taco shell was definitely fried, and it was definitely imperfect. Yeah. So it was fried by a human being, not a factory somewhere. It tasted good. That was good. I only have to go by the picture, but the picture shows a melted three cheese blend on the bottom of this taco, just leaking all over the place. And you could tell it's Photoshop, but it's like, it's there, and it's pretty good size of the taco is this leaking cheese. In real life, the taco is just the size of a normal Taco Bell taco, and you can't have that many layers. The picture shows the leaking cheese, and it shows the beef and the sour cream, and then all the accoutrements. I don't know if they forgot the melted three cheese blend, or if it was just so minute that it was barely registered, but it wasn't really as abundant as it shows in this picture, that's for sure, which is fine with me because I don't need all that leaking cheese coming out of my fucking taco. It definitely had a good amount of nacho cheese on it. And again, this is probably more user error than a uniform thing, but there was a lot of nacho cheese and probably seven tacos worth of sour cream, which a little too much sour cream for me. But I really like that shell. I don't think they're going to keep it around if there's somebody's actually doing manual labor to fry these. I somehow doubt it. It's Taco Bell, but that shell is really good. It's brings me back to home tacos and stuff like that. So I don't need the melted cheese. I don't even really need the nacho cheese sauce, but just put your Taco Supremes in that shell.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be buying a lot more Taco Supremes. So the first new Taco Bell menu item since the pandemic, I think, that I approve of.
Totally. This should be the recipe.
Yes.
For their food. I don't care. But listeners, to Border Boss listeners, who can reach their minds back, 4 years since the last real episode, may remember that when they came out with the naked egg morning taco where you're holding a fried egg in your hand, the people who made those things bitched openly. Like, I have to make food? I have to, like, wake up in the morning, come in here and make real... Fuck that. Like, they were not having it. And they couldn't be contained. I've never heard people crab that hard on the job. And so if they got to come in and make this... And, mine was, people who have made shells of their own at home may know that if you don't do it right, like, it just closes up.
Yes.
I don't know how, better people do it. Maybe they have, like, a mold or something like that. But anytime I've ever tried to do it and I just sort of pull it out with... like a chopstick or whatever I have around, it just folds together and you're done. Like you can't get it on, you just break it. You break it to unfold it or whatever, unless you're a master at putting your hands into boiling oil and fixing the problem. But mine were like that. Like they had been, misfried and they just tried to stuff the food inside this complete envelope, like a folded envelope of corn. And I had a total system failure when I ate it. It just exploded, just popped. Yeah. And it was still good. Like, I'll still go for this one. This is like, the flavor was so much better.
Did yours have a noticeable layer of melted cheese or no?
It just had nacho. It was like dripping with,
yeah,
I think just the nacho. I didn't notice that they had done anything fancy. They hadn't gotten out like the Gruyere and shredded up some brie or
that
anything.
That might be an apparition. That just might be, I don't know. Listeners report, have you got this yet? And was there a substantial layer of melted cheese on it? Because I don't think it's happening.
Like visual Colby Jack looking like camouflage swirl cheese.
Yeah.
No, good though. Like, I'm 100% on board for this to stay around forever. This should be their new shell.
Yeah, it should be. So Taco Bell, I know you're still listening. You've been catching up with our talks about hardcore music, but we're back. We're talking about tacos. You need to keep this shell around. You need to pay another employee $4 an hour, whatever you pay them. To just solely make these shells all day.
Isn't that a thing, like, in some real Mexican restaurants, they'll have a person who just does tortillas? They have, like, a tortilla master?
Yes.
That spare no expense. Get the tortilla master. More than half your food is on tortillas. Do it.
Yeah, do it. We need this. This is how you get the people back. But, yeah, if you never listen to the old Border Boss, I guess we'll get into the actual show, which is the First 7-Inch Club, which you can find us on Instagram at First 7-Inch Club. Those are all letters, or you can email us at first7inchclub@gmail.com. Today's record is by a band called Scapegrace, and the record is called Plead. This was from 1994 on Framework Records. Framework Records. Yep. Scapegrace was a band from around, I think, about 92 to 94. I'm gonna spit it out right now. This record was by Scott's request. So
that's right.
I was pretty light on the history, because I know Scott is probably way more knowledgeable than me. So it kind of took the day off. But yeah, I think they're around from 92 to 94. This is their first 7-inch. So they've had a couple splits and they've had a couple regular 7-inches, and this is definitely their first 7-inch. They are from Long Island, New York, but I'm sure Scott will fill you in. They have some connections to Albany that I cannot remember again, even though Scott told me a couple of weeks ago, but there's some connections. Outside of that, most of these guys, I think, you know, pretty much, started and ended with Scapegrace. They didn't have much else going on. Mm-hmm. Paul Joyce, a member, was in a band called Lynx and Compression and a few other bands after Scapegrace. And Steve was, I think he was in Half Man, and that's mm-hmm. a big one. He was in La Magna, which I've never known how to pronounce. I don't know if it's La Magna, like lasagna, or La Magna. Like, I've never heard anybody say that name out loud, but that was a band back then. He was also, I think, briefly in Mind Over Matter, because I don't think he was a regular, maybe he was like a founding member, I'm not sure, but so I think he had the more I guess prolific career, even though all these bands I just named I think have also been forgotten in time. But Scott, fill us in. I know you know the history. Let's hear it.
The thing that I realize is that, and I know I've known this for a while, is that Long Island hardcore is and has always been weird about the internet. Like, nobody has ever documented Long Island hardcore properly. There's no wiki, there's no like long form oral history or articles, or maybe there are by now, but it's like, it's tough to find stuff about the bands that didn't make it out and make the big time. So when you search for this, you find some very strange things. And one of the things I found over and over was that if you find a Facebook result, so I found like a Long Island hardcore nostalgia group on Facebook, and I found a Half Man group on Facebook, but it takes you to the oldest version of Facebook I've ever seen. It looks like a website from the 90s, like the original Facebook that Zuck used to like rate babes at Harvard. It's really, really old. And that's where I ended up finding like a few, but it's even then, it's just like a couple photographs, and the people are already speaking about them in the middle of conversation because they're like, it's like, you know, it's like 100 people who were all on the same, basically like rugby team for 4 years or whatever. They are all in each other's bands. They're all friends, and they all just start talking like inside baseball about any of the photos. So you can't get any information out of it. It's impossible, unless you know some things or something like that. I really don't know a whole lot about this because I was young during this time. But anyway, so yeah, the bassist was the only one who did anything like big, because he was in Lynx, which actually has members of Battles.
Yeah.
The guy from Helmet and one of the guys from Quickstand was in it. And the guy, the son of Anthony Braxton, who's like a jazz genius guy. Now, I only like a couple songs, but other people seem to like them. I don't know. But his band, like Lynx, is basically like Don Caballero. It's just straight math rock. There's no vocals. It's just like plinky. Yep. Just, it's numerical. And then Dark Water Transit with his other band, it's almost the same but better. It's more fun. So if you like arithmetic, Dark Water Transit, much better. It's fun if you dig numerals. And I thought it was okay. I don't like to listen to that much instrumental music. But Steve is the guy. He's the singer. He's still on Facebook. He seems to still be in touch with his hardcore roots. But he has the vibe of someone who doesn't really care about Facebook. So you also can't get a lot of information from his. Mike, if I told you that a former hardcore dad from Long Island had a hobby, what would that hobby be?
I don't think coffee is a hobby. Coffee shop.
It's a good guess. Yeah. It's going to be Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, they're
all, MMA, they all, yeah. they all grew up to do MMA. Yeah. But yeah, he's in a couple. So Lamania is pretty good. And Lamania, like if you end up liking Scapegrace from this review, Lamania is a more heavier, like more evil sounding Scapegrace. I actually really like that record a lot. So I think Scapegrace was a pretty beloved band in Long Island. I think that all the members did other things with other people. And like the reason Steve shows up in other bands that you wouldn't know him from is because he would just be there because they were all pals and he would like do backup vocals and do production and stuff like that with them and fill in their bands when they were touring. They all filled in each other's bands all the time. But what's funny is that if you watched a couple of Lamania videos, one of them had flyers and the flyer said featuring Stevie D from Half Man. So as far as I know, he filled in Half Man for like a couple shows on guitar. Versus singing in Scapegrace for like 4 years. I guess they knew him from Half Man rather than Scapegrace. So I don't know what kind of legacy they had. But this is the fun part is that through his Facebook, I discovered back, and maybe you remember this, back in 2013, someone was trying to make a crowdsource Long Island hardcore documentary named Something in the Water. It's Indiegogo made about $8,000 of its $50,000 goal, but it's Indiegogo. So they got that money. They got $8,000 and then there's no further development. And there's an 8-minute trailer where the first 2 minutes are about Fugazi, notably not from Long Island band Fugazi. But the tastiest morsel is that there was a benefit show for that documentary, featured a pretty solid lineup of bands I've never heard of in my life, including a band called War Sausage. But the headliner is none other than Tripface. You may remember that. I think we gave him a hard time because he's a pal of ours. Scott, he doesn't really talk to me that much, but he's a pal of ours. He reformed Tripface, and we made fun of him a little bit for that because he recruited other people who weren't in Tripface, I think, including our friend John Torn, who is not from Long Island. Also, like Fugazi is also not from Long Island. I think he had no idea that they were like helping to fund a documentary that, you know, nobody seems to have ever bothered making or anything like that. And I asked him about it and he said, yeah, I don't know. I was just there to play a show and he didn't really want to talk about it. So I didn't get any details.
Man.
But there you go. So there you go. So even if you give someone from Long Island cash, you give them money, you put it on the barrel, they still can't write anything down and they still can't document their own scene and they still can't put anything for shit. So there's just no trace, no tangible trace of Long Island hardcore to be had.
So you reached out to Scott after not talking to him for 27 years.
No, John. I will try and talk to Scott once in a while. He doesn't respond. He doesn't like me. So I don't think he responds to my messages, but I asked John about it because I knew he was filling in at that show and it was
Scott's just Scott's forgotten his roots, I think you would say. I follow him on Facebook. I actually don't know if or on Instagram. I don't know if he follows me. I should check. Maybe it's time to unfollow Scott J.
I tried to sell him a bass like a few years ago. I was like, hey, I got a bass for sale that you wanted. You still want it? And he just wouldn't write back to me. I'm like, man, that breaks my heart. I'm trying to get money out of you right
now. But okay, then I'll move on to Framework Records, which I don't think they're around for too long. I assume somebody in Scapegrace or one of their friends is the person behind Framework Records. Mm-hmm. I think it might even say in the record, the actual Scapegrace record, that one of these guys is the guy behind Framework. So
yeah,
but they only put out a few things. This was their first release, and then they did a comp which also featured Campaign, which we've also talked about, and that goes back to I think Scott said last episode that we only really have two records that we listened to back then, and we're just circling around them over and over again. They also released the Conniption 7-inch, which was really good, band from Albany and I think Long Island together. Ethnic, I'd never heard of them, and then they released the Half Man record, and then disappeared for good. So, yeah. You know, only five releases, but all pretty decent records of forgotten music that no one really remembers, but pretty solid. I don't really have anything else to add about the record label outside of that.
Me neither. I don't think I ever really thought about it because the word framework was used for other things in hardcore. Like the band before Earth Crisis was called Framework. And then there was a screamo band called Framework that I knew about.
Yes.
And it was just this confusing situation of hardcore. So I saw Framework on the record and my eyes just crossed and I just didn't even think about it anymore. But I'm looking at the discography and, guess who has four of the five Framework records?
You.
One of the top collectors in the scene. I have most of the Framework discography. I feel like I should spend the $4 to get the Ethnic CD and put this thing to bed. Ethnic is another one of Steve's bands. So it stands to reason that that Steve may be Framework. He may be the person behind the label. Yeah, I think the inside of the record says something like, thanks for supporting Framework shows so we could put this record out or something like that. Yeah. So
doesn't give his name, but yeah, it's safe to say this was Steve's record label. Personally, I don't really have much to add. I vaguely remember this band. I think I either had this record or I had a split with Conniption or I had both. And listening back, like I didn't even remember what they sounded like. I think as soon as I put it on, I heard the vocals and I definitely remember the vocals. But outside of that, this was kind of just like hearing something for the first time again. They were just always one of those bands that people would kind of bring up when they wanted to sound like they're a little more underground than you. They knew like a cool band, like, oh man, Scapegrace, they're great. But you know, it's one of those types of bands, at least back then, not so much anymore. But so they're a band that people have talked about, especially in that New York area, because a lot of Long Island people end up migrating to Albany and back and forth. So Scapegrace is always kind of on the tip of people's tongues.
Oh, you like Kill Your Idols? I like Scapegrace.
Yeah.
when I was in high school, my friend Brian was an actual hardcore scene guy, and he got in Monster X and PNA, and that's how basically all of my friends got into hardcore got into it. He recruited my friend Jason, who was not the J you know, a different Jason, to play guitar, and that's when Monster X and PNA got really metal. So the guy that I know is the reason that they were playing like crazy Slayer riffs and stuff like that. I mean, they were already kind of metallic, but he joined and made them tight and really medley because he was a shredder. So he was a weird dude and he liked to tell weird stories because he was, you know, he was out there playing with Monster X. So he got to play with like the Boredoms and like Drop Dead and all that's his introduction to hardcore, is he got to be playing with Rorschach and stuff like that. And he would just come back and tell me about all the funny bands names that he played with. He had a lot of fun with the band Crawl Pappy, who was like a pre-Helmet band. He just thought that was the funniest name. So we were hanging out and he was making fun of the name Scapegrace, and I started playing the song Enzymes, which is a really cool riff. Like he was just playing it on his guitar, and ages later I can still remember hearing it for the first time. And he was like, yeah, Scapegrace, they're pretty good, you can have it. And he gave me the record and he stuck it in a Tribe Called Quest Can I Kick It 7-inch cover. So that's all I've ever had. I never have seen any of the layout or any of the other stuff. We talked about the show I went to on the campaign episode, that I was thinking I was there to see Half Man, and I think everybody else was too. And then Steve took the stage and they were playing Scapegrace, and I had like, you know, a pleasure seizure because I really like Scapegrace and had no idea they were a real band. I thought they were just, you know, shapes or something. And he has the roundest, happiest face. Like, he looks like a 70s Have a Nice Day face. I think that's why he gets to be in everybody's band, because they're like, Steve, come up here. I don't make friends, so I don't make any connections to people. I don't have any friends that I can't make friends with a band. I can't walk up and shake hands and say, I like your band, can we be pals? I've never done that. It doesn't work for me. But ex-bandmate of mine, Mark Telfian, he's a beloved Albany hardcore guy. He's in Limp Wrist, a couple other bands. Hail Mary. I was in Hail Mary for a little while. And he was in the band Factory, who is the other band on that Anger in English comp. So it's Man is a Bastard, Campaign, Scapegrace, and a band called Factory. And he was in that band. He was in Conniption. So it's like he must have been friends with these guys, and he was just doing stuff with them all the time. And last year on Instagram, I found out that he was just in Scapegrace. I was like, oh, you were in Scapegrace. All right. I think Scapegrace had a pretty stable lineup, but for a while he was filling in because he was just pals and whatever, and he got to play bass. And I'm like, you motherfucker. You got to play in Scapegrace and never mentioned it. So that's as close as we get to a personal connection, is that we all know a member, but he didn't bring it up until 2020. The year 2020 is the first time he revealed that he'd been in this band.
You gotta keep it on the down low that you were in Scapegrace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to the actual record. So, you know, for 1992, this is pretty, I would say, pretty pro package. It's on real paper, which is, you know, like real glossy stuff you want to print on type of cover. And that's kind of rare in 1992. It's a triple folds out into three panels, so six panels altogether. The actual layout is pretty standard for the time. It's all black and white photos, which are for 1992 pretty decent photos. These aren't horrible. I mean, they're all like fucking blasted with contrast, so you can barely tell what's going on. But I think the funniest part is I can't tell, but it looks like because of the high contrast, it looks like the drummer has a real dirty, sleazy mustache, which could just be a weird shadow or whatever. And he also seems to be wearing an unfortunate type of hat. Like, it's not a cowboy hat, but it's I don't know. It's one of those types of hats that has a brim and like a cowboy type of look to it. But I don't know. Yeah. And again, that could be like a shadow.
Crocodile Dundee hat, yeah, or something.
That could be a shadow, and it could just be a baseball cap, but I'm pretty sure it is a Crocodile Dundee type hat. The interesting thing about this is the cover is some, I won't say famous, but it's some old painting. And on the inside, it says a portion of the front cover was taken from Without Words by Sanaui Tolkachu from 1945. So I think they wanted to use V's instead of W's, or they don't know. But if you Google this, nothing comes up. Like there's no, the only thing that comes up is if you Google Without Words, Sanaui Tolkachu, or I think even if you do Sanovi Tokachev, all that comes up is like sometimes Google will pick up words from books, like Google Reads.
Yeah.
So that all that comes up when you search this is like text from one book, and that's the only search for this is, and that's it. So obviously they got this information from that one book that's on Google Reads, and it's wrong. So this is an old painting. I don't know what it's from. I guess they kind of worked everything around that where they put their names and stuff. And this is it's handwritten. It's a handwritten logo. And this shows how times are different, because they hand wrote all the lyrics in this difficult typeface. And that's something you do when you're bored. Like, no one has that much time to do this anymore, because there's a lot of words to write down. And that's pretty much it. Oh, what am I saying? That's not pretty much it. So this came with three separate pieces of cutout paper. One was just for a free patch sticker, band, and t-shirt info. Send a salvage just stamp envelopes to Scapegrace, which this info is on the record too. So, and they just really wanted you to write to them. Secondly, there's a little piece of paper that says, "We have had a couple of complaints that this record skips on some stereos. If yours skips, here's some tips." And then this would come off really condescending in 2021, because everybody who owns a record player knows this stuff. But, because it's stuff like, oh, you check your stylus, or, you know, just like stuff you should know if you own a record player. But back in 1992, people probably didn't know this. What's weird about this is that they must have had these records sitting around long enough for people to complain enough for them to then put in an insert. So that's pretty strange. But coup de grace, this also includes a hand cut printed from a printer, like a home printer Scapegrace sticker of their weird stained glass logo. And it's very endearing, because it's been a long, long, long time since I've seen that Avery sticker paper. Because, no one uses this stuff. This is fucking gone with the dinosaurs. This stuff doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And this sticker is pristine. So I got this from Vinyl Conflict, who's a record store in Virginia that this guy Bobby runs it. I'm not really friends with him, but a lot of our friends are friends with this dude. So check out Vinyl Conflict if you haven't. But I don't think he included that this included a pristine printer paper sticker. And that would have been, he can have added $3 on this. This was a get and a half for me to have one of these fucking crazy stickers from 30 years ago. That's insane. Outside of that, it's pretty decent. Nothing to write home about. Layout and everything for 1992, it's pretty good. I think it's pretty eye-catching. I want to say this mystery photo or this mystery painting was used by other bands at some point in time, but that's why I was trying to Google it to figure it out, but I couldn't find any actual info. But I think that front painting thing was used a couple more times.
I will unlock the mystery.
Okay.
So this is a Zinovy Tolkachev. I think is how you pronounce Zinovy Tolkachev, and it's spelled 9,000 ways. He's like, okay. You cannot conclusively Google how they spelled this guy's name. But he's known because, so this is a guy, this is cool. This dude joined the Red Army in his 40s to fight Nazis.
Oh my God.
And marched his ass all the way to Germany for real and fought the shit out of some Nazis. And I'm not like a History Channel guy. I don't know like World War II things. So I don't, if I use the wrong military term, go fuck yourself. I don't care. But whatever, Russian team liberated death camps. He was one of those guys. So he was going like from death camp to death camp, saving people and stuff like that. So he's one of the first people in the Allied forces to have seen how Auschwitz was. He like liberated Auschwitz. And like, I don't really know how the world thought of that stuff at the time, but I think that no one knew it was that bad. So he was one of the guys who opened the door. I was like, "Oh, what are you guys doing? What the fuck are you doing here?" And drew everything. He drew everything he saw. So there's like lots and lots of drawings of, and he was like, he's basically the first person to visually document what happened at Auschwitz, as far as I know. So this is a drawing of somebody being liberated, or you know, a survivor of Auschwitz. That's what that's a drawing of. I, to the best of my knowledge, escape race is not a political ban, so I guess they just like this drawing.
Yeah.
But if you see the real thing, this is on Nazi letterhead. Like, he grabbed some office paper from one of the camps that he was liberating and just started drawing. So, like, the actual painting has...
So, what did you Google to find this? Because I did a lot of different spellings, a lot of shit.
I think I put in, like, how they wrote it. And Google said, wait, did you mean Zinovy, blah, blah, blah? And then I was like, yeah, okay. And then it says, wait, did you mean this guy? And I said, yeah, okay. And they kept going from there. Anything that you could find. And then I finally just Googled some variation of his name with that painting. And you'll see that painting hanging up. I think it might be in the Holocaust Museum. I'm not sure, but it's hanging up somewhere.
I was getting deep. I was putting like Holocaust art like with his name. And I just like, it was just, I was getting dead ends because there's somebody else who's like a ballet dancer or something that has the same name. So
yeah,
I was hitting a lot of dead ends.
No, all the results are pretty deep links. They're nothing. There's no fun link to find for this guy. That's like easy. They're all kind of like scholarly. So I don't think he's famous, particularly famous, despite the worth of that. And the writing. So the handwriting on this is remarkable.
Yeah,
I guess people should go to the Instagram and look at this because it is by hand and it's consistent. Like, it's not perfect, but it's consistent. So he always writes the L's as capitals. He always writes the S's, and I think the P's, like, certain letters are always capitalized and certain letters are always lowercase. Always. And there's little splatters. So sometimes he'll draw a little splatter coming off of the letters. And they wrote all of the lyrics this way. So the the guy sat down with his marker and drew this sort of screamo tag font or whatever that he came up with. Every written word on this thing basically is in this handwritten font. This human computer just made this thing. I remember this sticker though because I had it, and I don't remember how I got it, but I had this sticker, and I also had a very poorly fitting shirt of that graphic, one of the worst shirts I've ever owned. I still wore it because I love Skate Race so much, but it was like a square. It was like the guys from Flash Gordon that are squares. I put it on and I just look like a sail from a boat or something like that. I don't know if you listen to this, your rip, but I think your MP3 actually has the skip in it.
Yeah, it does.
Did you? Yeah, you found it.
Yeah.
So maybe you gotta find a couple pennies and tape them to your player arm.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that in the song, but yeah, this is Escape Grace. I'm here to tell you, I'm from the future. It is your record. It's not my record player. It's definitely your record.
Yeah.
So I guess we could get into the music. This is four tracks, and I'm gonna commend these guys right away. They use full sound. They're almost tipping the scales. They almost had to make this a double 7-inch. They got so close. I think this is like close to 12 or 13 minutes. They're using all the time they can, and if you're a long time listener for 7-inch Club, you know I appreciate that. They got their money's worth out of that 7-inch. This is great. So the first track is called "Suck the Dead." We'll be right back. So this starts off with a Dawn of the Dead sample, which they credit in the liner notes, which is great. They also credit that they have no permission to use it. So it's very brazen of them, for one. I mean, back then, no one's thinking they're going to get sued over a fucking hardcore record. But I think what people might not know, if you're not from 1992, is that Dawn of the Dead was kind of a rare movie in 1992, which is insane to think about now, which how much zombie shit we were poisoned with, just all over the place. But yeah, it wasn't until like 2006 when like Dawn of the Dead became like a readily available thing. So this was probably pretty badass to start a sample with this obscure Dawn of the Dead, or start a record with this obscure Dawn of the Dead sample at that point. Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned earlier, I think the first thing you are going to notice is the vocals. And this is definitely, you know, you're with it or you're against it. This is, you know, this is it. Like, it's not going to change. You're going to know right away if you can deal with this. It is a high-pitched scream or a shriek, I would say. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't let up. Not in this song, at least. There's in the other songs, he does a more normal voice. But this song, it does not let up. And you are going to know right away this band is for you. This is, I think the record as a whole is kind of cool because it's half hardcore and half, you know, elements of hardcore and then elements of what we like to call 90s music. This type of music you can't really place because it only existed from about 1990 to 1994. And this is the most 90s music song on this. Like, this is difficult for me to describe what this music sounds like. I think the closest would be post-hardcore, but I don't think they were like, let's start a post-hardcore band, because that wasn't even really a term yet. Like, it was sort of a term, but not really. I think these guys were just having fun making music that they thought would be fit in maybe a hardcore setting, but it's definitely leaning more towards... It's aggressive alternative, I guess. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, it's can't even say, like, Helmet or anything like that. Like, it's heavy, but it's not super heavy. It's heavier than alternative music, but it's not, like, hardcore heavy. So it's somewhere in the middle with this high-pitched shrieking vocals. I gotta say, if you are not a fan of 90s music or if you don't know what we're talking about, you might listen to this record, and this is probably going to be your least favorite song. Just right away, you're going to hate this song. This is probably a difficult song to listen to in 2021 for the first time and try and get a good idea of what this band is. But so if you are a First 7-Inch Club super fan and you listen to every single record we talk about, you're going to want to power through this song and maybe listen to the rest, because I could definitely see people absolutely hating this song but liking the rest of the record. But what do you think, Scott?
Well, I think you got to leave hardcore behind, and maybe alt metal, which is, you know, kind of the thing. I kind of think this sounds like a Dio song or like a pop metal song. You know, it's because it's cool. It's like cool. Like, it's kind of like epic chords and kind of like upbeat. And there's like a good riff. Like, they actually play kind of like a cool riff every now and then. Like, you know, I'm blanking on how to hum it or whatever. But I think it works. I think it's fun. There's something about the bass on this album that I think is technically not good for hardcore, but I really like it. It makes all the, cause they do a lot of trippy parts.
Yeah.
And I think when they trip out, the sort of the chorused out bass, is awesome. It's maybe not good for the whole record, but it's good for those parts. And, I completely agree. I think this band formed maybe like a year too early for their own good, because they're working with forces that hadn't been tamed yet. The idea of like mixing metal and hardcore wasn't a clear path. And I think, I think exactly what you said. I think they were just playing whatever they wanted, and they were allowed to, and there was no reason not to, because there wasn't like a codified set of metalcore rules or yet. So they have some punky stuff, they have some moshy stuff, and they have some dark metal stuff. And this may be a reason they're not that popular, because back then, you know, they only put out a few 7-inches, and you know, every time they put out 10 or 15 minutes worth of music, they were doing like 6 or 7 ever so slightly different micro genres. Yeah. That don't really intermingle all that well. And that might be a lot to ask of a hardcore kid. You know, maybe a 2020s wizened old metal lords like us can take this. But I think that maybe we've cracked the code as to why we don't hear a whole lot about Scapegrace 30 years later. But I mean, I like this song because I like the nature of that kind of pop metal sound being tried. They're like, hey, like, what if we wrote a Winger song and screamed over it? And this is the most shrieking there is. And a shriek is a great word for it. It's not screamo scream. It's kind of like, he sounds like he's being put into a wood chipper feet first. And like, these are his dying screams. And, yeah. You know, I think even when I was young, I thought it was strange and couldn't really get it. But then I got into screamo like a few minutes later. I was like, oh, that's what he's sort of doing. I guess I just retconned it as something I like. But I mean, I think that this is as hard as he goes. This is the hard. He just screams his way through this whole song, and none of his other tactics are on display in this song. He just shrieks his way through it. It's the barn burner, though. It's like the fast one. You're like, we're getting you started. We're getting you ramped up with our fiery, ferocious four on the floor song.
Yeah, even though you were probably hearing it in the background, but it's not shrieking like power violent shrieking. Like, he's still trying to sing. He's just doing it in this very abrasive voice. Yeah. The next song is called One Moment. Takes a turn for a little more traditional hardcore, which is it's actually kind of jarring at first, because after that first song you're just kind of like, okay, I get it. But this is this definitely has a more, we need a traditional hardcore part in our song, and they have it, and it's this song. This is the song where it skips. That's skipping that I was warned about in the record. Overall, the song isn't super long, but I believe it could be a lot shorter. Like, I think this song would have been a lot more powerful if they shaved a solid at least 30 seconds off the song. It's still, I say traditional hardcore, but it's still done their way, so it's definitely odd. Like, it's not, I don't know, it's Scott knows the more technical side of things, but they're definitely playing traditional hardcore through a method that is not traditional. So it's kind of sounds a little crazy, but yeah, it's I think this is probably the least notable song on the whole record, just because it's like I said, it's more traditional, and it's, I just find every other song on this more worth talking about.
I, you know, so if the first song was their Dio moment, this is like, you think this is going to be their Black Sabbath moment because of the intro. They're like, oh, we're going to do some electric funeral shit here. But no, it's a fake out. It doesn't happen. It just happens for a second. And they go into just the most normal 90s hardcore song on the whole record. And then you get to hear Steve, the singer, doing his very desperate out of breath vocal thing.
Yeah.
Which, so context is everything. You know, like when I listened to this for the first time, I didn't know shit about shit. I wasn't a hardcore kid. I was like a metal guy. And, you know, all hardcore kids in the 90s were drawing these weird faceless, depressed figures. Like, all records would have those kind of like stick figure-y depressed faceless drawings on them. And I was thinking of this band as being that guy, like those faceless Slender Man stick figure guys, like the Petitioning the Empty Sky cover guy or something like that. And if you think of this that way, those out of breath vocals are kind of cool and spooky. But if you're not me and you're not thinking of that guy, I don't know. Maybe that's a pretty specific set of circumstances, and you know, your mileage may vary. But this is kind of like a herky jerky song. Like, the intro is like, it's got all these stop start things, and it's got that chorused out bass, which makes things sound a little less heavy than they could be otherwise. So. Yeah, now you got it all. Now you've heard everything that they're going to do. You've heard like weird metal and weird hardcore and all the vocal styles that he has. So if you can't take it at this point, the next track may convince you. If the next one doesn't do it, you can leave. You can go home. You don't have to do any more scapegrace.
Yep, then we're going to flip it over to side B, and the first song is called Prayer.
Oh,
Yeah, actually, I would say if you're listening to this, start off with side B, because I think these are the two hits on the record. And I think this does a better mixture of, kind of more of a cosmic gumbo of what they're trying to do. This song, I mean, I don't know. I assume they did this consciously because it's such a perfect rip. But this is just a groovier version of Burning Fight by Inside Out. This is you're not fooling me. This is a couple years after this was recorded. I'm pretty sure somebody in the band was a huge fan of that record because this is just Burning Fight, but it's groovier. It has a groove to it. He sounds nothing like Zach De La Roca, but he's he's kind of doing the same cadence of Burning Fight, and it's definitely I think it's a conscious rip. He does, as Scott alluded to last song, he has like a more cleaner vocal. I didn't get spooky out of it, that's for sure. I didn't get faceless faceless Converge Man out of it.
Yeah,
it just kind of sounded like I don't know. It's he's from Long Island. It's probably like a melodic hardcore thing, and it's just he's not that melodic when he does it. But yeah, that voice gets a little goofy on this one, and it sounds like he's almost trying to do like a Foghorn Leghorn. And he says, "I said it happened too fast," and I don't know where that accent came from, because dude, you're from Long Island. You're not from Foghorn Leghorn country or Yosemite Sam. You're not one of those guys. I love this song. All joking aside, I do love this song. I think this song is the most, as far as like reminding me of like nostalgia of the 90s and the early 90s to mid 90s, this is the song that does it. This is the song I would hear a band play live that I'd probably not even buy their demo of. And it would just be like one of those songs that you never left that era. It sounds exactly like that time in my mind. Again, as much as I love the song, again, this song can be trimmed about 30 seconds too, to make it a little more impactful. I think this band needed an editor maybe to get to that next level, but this is probably my favorite song on the record.
This and Enzymes, the other song from the comp, are the two songs I think of as like platonic ideal scapegrace songs. They're both kind of the same. They're both like mid-paced stompers with a cool riff, like a cool beginning riff, and his screams land like the kind of a rhythm. And this song has the best scapegrace trippy parts. I don't even know how he plays it. There's like a there's like a weird part, and I don't know how the bassist is playing while he's playing, because he's like sliding up the string twice when they never slides down. So you need three hands.
He has
to
he has a double neck bass.
Or he's got a buddy that comes and plays the string. So I got to email Mark and I say, did they teach you this song? Did you have to grow a hand to play this song? Show me how you do it. So as I said, I'd never owned the lyric sheet for this, and I can't believe how wrong I was because of exactly what you said, the accent or the thing that he does. And so it's totally his fault that I didn't know what any of the words to this song were, and I thought I did. I thought this was about something totally different. So once you figure that out and you look back, I look back through the rest of the record, I was like, none of these, he does it all the time. You can't really tell because he's screaming, but he just, it's like he's got different vowels than the rest of us. He has he has a different alphabet to use or something like that. That's weird. It's almost like he was like Eddie Van Halen hiding his hands from people so they couldn't see how he played. Like he didn't want anyone to know how he was writing his hardcore lyrics or something like that. So I think that the first half of this song is great. And I think the back half could have been great if he didn't do the out of breath vocals, the crying kind of vocals or whatever. And I'll understand if our friends don't like this part, because it's the big ending. It's the big ending, and he's just kind of going, I'm like, scream that. Dude, that's the part. Do it. And he kind of doesn't do it. Check out the first half, and then check out Enzymes. Find Enzymes on YouTube. That's a similar song, and then you'll have the back-to-back hits.
The last song is called Sleepwalk.
You can't help me out. You broke.
I think this song, at least partially, a part of the song is an Underdog song. So with the evidence on the table, this Underdog ripoff, this Burning Fight ripoff, and it just dawned on me that he's probably not doing a Foghorn Leghorn. He's probably trying to sound like Ray Capo. So I think this guy's just a big fan of Revelation Records. So
yeah,
I think I've cracked the code of Scapegrace. They're just a weird Revelation Records worship band. Yeah. The part that, I mean, I love Underdog, so I love that part, but the part that's not Underdog is definitely not a hardcore kind of riff, but it's very frantic, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so weird. Like, it's such a weird thing to stick on an otherwise kind of old-school, moshy type of hardcore riff to pair it with, and it's pretty cool. Again, it's nothing I think anybody was on anybody's radar back then, and definitely not anybody's radar now, so... That's pretty cool, and as Scott has said throughout this whole review, is it's really dawning on me by this point, song four, that the bassist in this band has probably had a little more input than the average bassist in a band, because he's you know, he's very I don't know, flowery, I guess he would say. It's very he's expressing himself a lot with that bass, a lot more than a lot of bassists do. So it's definitely, if you're into the bass, if you're a bassist, definitely listen to that record just based on this, on what you can do in an otherwise kind of, I mean, I'm not going to say they're a simple band, but you know, for a 90s band, they're not doing anything super insane. So check it out just for that. But yeah, I love Side B as a whole, back to back. I think these are two great songs.
The previous song was the hit, but I like this intro, this like thrash riff, the double pick, like the double picking thrash thing is so cool. Like, there wasn't anybody in hardcore that I knew that was doing just thrash metal, because this is just thrash metal song.
Yeah.
And then the bassist is playing through his like Peter Hook, like Joy Division chorus sound, and he really jumps out in front of the band with his dick out, and he is fine. He's got the chops. He really is good. Like, he's actually a really good bassist. But then when they go to an actual mosh part, you're like, man, I wish he had a different pedal. I wish he would press some other button to make it, because it kind of like saps it a little bit. I think this is as out of breath as the vocals get. I think, like we've said about other records, maybe they did this all in a day or something. It's like, it's all well played. It's all really like decent performance wise. I don't think there's any like clams on this record or anything like that, but I think maybe the vocalist got like a half hour to do his part. Like, get in there, get it done. Because, there's a part in this song that has like a featured scream, like all by itself. And it's like, it's like he's really trying to get his, but his lungs are done, and he can't do it. Which that kind of has a vibe of its own. I mean, that's you could find something in that. I'm a generous listener, so I'm hearing it as cool. I think this has a strong ending though. It's got like a big frantic thrash four on the floor part, and then even does like the falling apart band thing. You know, like it's like a live show and it's time to tip your waiter and leave. That's as ending as you can get on a hardcore record. But this will really focus you on all the things that you may or may not like about the band are in high relief in this song.
So that's it. My rating system, as you may know if you've listened before, is either throw this right in the trash, buy this in the dollar bin, the bargain racks, or maybe pay full price for it, or even pay collector's prices for it. I gotta say overall that I don't know if hardcore is done exploring the 90s, like modern hardcore. It's definitely, for the past couple of years, there's been a lot of bands that were just like, we're gonna play 90s hardcore. And I don't know if we're already beyond that, because I've definitely heard a couple bands that are already aping early 2000s hardcore and metalcore. So we might already be beyond it, but if we aren't, I think hardcore is it's like a medium like movies. People are constantly rediscovering and unearthing just like shot on video movies that no one's ever heard of, and they're reassessing movies all the time. Like, that's just a constant part of, if you're a movie nerd, is just constantly unearthing things and reassessing them and stuff like that. And I think when hardcore does the nostalgia thing, it's just like they reach that top surface and then they stop.
Yeah.
And, they don't really mine for anything else. And I think this is a record, if you're looking for 90s influences, I think this is a record to mine from, because, like I said with the whatever from like a couple episodes ago for Days Gone or whatever the fuck it was, you might not get direct influence from it, but I think this is kind of an inspiring record to listen to say, oh, the, you know, they did weird shit like this. It wasn't just Earth Crisis and Strife and Snapcase back then. You had like these kind of very original bands doing original music. Even Conniption. Conniption's like a highly underrated band too. Just pick up the Scapegrace Conniption 7-inch and just vibe, as the kids say. Just vibe to it, man. You might get some good influences. So just for that alone, I think, you know, this is something that could be somebody's next, like, kind of unearthed influence that people aren't thinking of. If you could break from the pack of just being influenced by the same 10 bands over and over again. I'm going to go at least full price on this. I don't know. It's just, it is very, you're going to love this or hate this, so I can't go full collector's prices on it. But I think if you're in a band, you're looking for offbeat influences. In a hardcore band, I mean, not a normal band, but, you know, if you're in a hardcore band and you're looking for some offbeat influences, pick this up, give it a listen, see what it does to your brain.
And my guess is that if you're the person who digs the next layer down and robs from those bands, you just don't tell anybody. That's why people don't hear about that much. So I think that they were a band who's pretty well known in their scene at the time. I think that if you were there or if you were adjacent to that scene, people probably knew who Scapegrace was. I don't know, you know, if they were hugely popular, but they're confident sounding. The only video that you can find on YouTube of them live that I could find is them playing so hard and the moshing getting so hard that they got shut down half a song. The show just gets shut down half a song in. But this is not the sound that made it out of Long Island.
No.
Even though, like, you know, there was, I think when most people think of 90s Long Island stuff, they probably think of like melodic hardcore. Even though there was Milhouse, there was Sons of Abraham. VOD was screamy. Silent Majority, the first thing, was screamy. And then, like, the bands that were screamy and made it out were the ones who were like, oh, people don't like that, I'm going to sing for the next few albums or whatever. I think most people just think about, like, Glassjaw and, like, the Movie Life. I don't know which bands are the big ones. I know, like, later on, it's like Crime and Stereo and stuff like that. But from the 90s, I would guess it's going to be Silent Majority and Glassjaw and Movie Life would be kind of the names that people remember the most. I don't think there's any room for anyone to give a shit about Scapegrace. There's no room in there for anyone to care about that. But, you know, I think they're unique. I think they're cool. I think they're really an island. I don't think there's anyone who kind of tackled metalcore or whatever this is quite this way. I can't think of anybody. You know, a few months ago, my mom began the process of moving out of my childhood home. And she said, come get your shit. Anything that's still in my house, I'm going to throw out if you don't want it. I found my oldest bass case. And guess what's on there? That Scapegrace sticker is on there. The paper, this case is being held together by duct tape. It's 30 something years old. It has a lot of crappy stickers on it, including a Crisis sticker. And it's got the paper Kinko's Scapegrace sticker. It must have come with the record or whatever. I don't know how I got that, but survived for 30 years. And yours has too. The one that you have has to be 30 something years old, or almost 30 years old, and it's in perfect condition. So this is like amazing. It's been in a dank attic, and it's been in your record sleeve, and it's in perfect condition. So if you like weird thrash, interesting vibes, I enthusiastically encourage you to risk $2 on Discogs right now to listen to this 4.5 shitty paper Kinko sticker out of 5 record. But since it's so foundational to me, I want you to know that in my heart, this is a 5 out of 5 record. I'm not going to say it out loud, but this is a 5 out of 5 record. And if you want me to make you the sticker, I'll send you the EPS. I'm going to make this myself. Fuck it. I want to make a new shirt that fits.
Okay, thanks for listening. If you want to reach out and have any suggestions for us of bands we should tackle, anything like that, you know, it's more fun if there's some kind of connection to somebody, to these records. We're just not shooting in the dark. So just reach out for 7inchclub at Gmail or for 7inchclub on Instagram. If you don't do the emails, you just reach out, send us a message, something like that. Until next week, you have a fun time listening to these old ass records.
I'm just going to paste in the scream that doesn't quite land here.